Okay, hello and welcome everybody. I'm Mary Elizabeth Bradford, and today's Career Power Strategy Sessions is finally on my favorite topic, which is executive strategies for tapping into the hidden job market. As far as I'm concerned, every person that has a career needs to understand how to take an entrepreneurial approach to their career. Choices. It's so empowering. It will accelerate everything you do and lead to things that maybe you could only dream about. The philosophies and the strategies that I'm going to be sharing with you today are really appropriate for all age levels, all career levels. There's very few people this wouldn't be applicable for or to. So one thing that happens with a lot of people is they have an okay resume or good resume. They start nosing around on job boards, maybe submitting for a few here or there, trying to play around with LinkedIn, trying to understand how to optimize that. Maybe they meet with a couple of friends, ask them if they know anyone who's looking or looking to hire, might need somebody like them, and their friends say, "No, but give me your resume, and if I hear of anybody, I will definitely let you know." Sometimes that works. Most of the time it doesn't. And basically at the end of a 2 or 3 month period, that person's left feeling fairly frustrated, not really understanding what's wrong. And then that's really when they call me. Unfortunately, I wish that was 3 months earlier, because with a little bit of planning and due diligence, we can all circumvent that frustration and that wasted time, because in most everybody's case, it's not you, it's the marketing mediums and the methodologies that we're using. Job boards are in existence because of advertisers, not because they work. So that's an unfortunate but true situation. Now, if you're a microbiologist, you're really niche-y and you have some specialty, then yeah, you can look at job boards for those types of jobs, and it's, you know, probably okay to apply for them. But for the majority of us, job boards are just a place where, you know, it's a cattle call with a 1-3% response rate. I can rewrite people's resumes and they'll get a better response even on job boards. But it's so much easier, so much more fruitful, so much quicker and more satisfying to use some simple workarounds to identify and find jobs. And I think where some of the misunderstanding about the hidden job market comes in is we have a tendency to think, well, you know, if a company isn't hiring, how in the world do I approach them if they don't have anything advertised? Or they're a large company, they're going to insist that I get pushed through this process in order just to be considered. And similar type of thoughts. Some of that is true, not to the degree that you would think it is. And so today we're going to talk about what the hidden job market really is, easy ways to find hidden jobs, why it makes sense to do it. I'm going to be giving you some numbers, some statistics that back my philosophy on this, and also some stories, and how learning how to tap into the hidden job market can help the, you know, person right out of college and on into retirement and everybody in between, how to start getting quality interviews and long job searches, or things that are happening that might be frustrating to you, and some online tools and resources that I give my clients in my private coaching sessions that can, again, accelerate this process. Okay, so first of all, what the hidden job market really is. Many people, I'll just back up and explain this, there are a lot of different types of career professionals. What makes me different is that I was a recruiter and a high-level job search coach, and then I was a mediocre resume writer back in the early 2000s who became a very good resume writer. And so having said all that, that gives me a unique window into the world of job searching, because I've been on the front lines of strategy. Now, if you are in human resources and you decide that you want to be a resume writer, you're a brilliant writer, or you have an English degree, or, you know, something like this, or maybe you are an editor, or in advertising, then those types of resumes, too, can be very effective. But when it comes to job searching, understanding what really goes on in the front lines is invaluable information. And that's the type of information that I impart to my clients because I've been doing that for 17 years. So the hidden job market, when you hear people saying, oh, it's a code word for networking, absolutely couldn't be farther from the truth, in my camp at least. The hidden job market are the, if you look at the Bureau of Labor Statistics numbers, there's about, let's say, you know, half a million, high five, and 300,000 to 400,000 six-figure positions that are filled every month in the United States. And there's, you know, I don't know how many, 100,000+ positions over $300,000 a year. At the $300,000 mark and up, you're going to have about 5% of those jobs being advertised. At the 100 to you know, 299 mark, you're going to have maybe 10% of those jobs make it to some type of a job board or broadcast somewhere. And at the high five figure, you're going to have maybe 20% of those jobs, 15-20%, that are going to make it to some type of public forum. The rest of them are hidden. And how are they filled? Well, yes, they are filled through word of mouth, which you could call networking. But the average networking, if all you did was quote-unquote network, even if you did it right for the average six and multi-six-figure executive, the average job search is still 18 months. So as far as I'm concerned, my clients generally don't have 18 months to wait for the results that they want. So the object becomes, how do we tap in to those 5 to 20%, I'm sorry, to those 85 to 95% of positions, of opportunities that are hidden? Well, at those odds, it makes logical sense to flip your search on its head. And instead of you waiting for something to come to you, I'm flexible, I'm open, I know it when I'll see it. Unfortunately, fun as that is, we have to employ a little bit different due diligence in our job searches today. We have to embark in a more controlled fashion with more leadership. Now, most executives feel very comfortable in this space. They don't like being passive receivers. So for a lot of us, this comes as a welcome opportunity to just, you know, do what we've continued to do what we know. And the entrepreneurial approach, making this happen for yourself, is easier now today than ever before just because of the availability of information on the Internet. So let me preface this by saying, if you want to use job boards, go to Indeed.com so you don't waste your time, set up a couple keywords, and have that aggregator scrape jobs and send it to your email inbox every morning. Spend 10 minutes having coffee and treat it like, hey, I'm just going to get a bird's eye view of what's going on in my market, in my industry. Look at who's moving, who's growing, who's hiring, patterns of hiring, industries, sub-industries. And just because, first of all, it's going to guarantee two things. You're not going to waste your time doing things that have a very low payback for you. And second, that bird's eye view of your industry and your position of choice is going to give you more clarity, more information about what's going on, and then you're going to feel more confident. You're going to feel more in control. So the beginning of every job search should start with due diligence, a little bit of due diligence on your end. Just like you are running marketing for a company and you're trying to figure out what's the best poker hand for you to play with, what's your driving motivators, what industries are growing, moving, not in decline, and then again, you're fishing where the fish are. You're playing your best poker hand. So, for example, let's say I want to stay here in San Antonio, Texas. I want to stay in the career services industry. Well, my due diligence is probably going to start with a little bit of research on what's growing and moving in San Antonio. So The first, and I'm going to jump around a little bit, but it'll all tie up at the end really nice. But I want to start with due diligence and talking about some of the free resources you can use on the internet to give yourself more power and control over the situation. So go to Google News Alerts. Just Google News Alerts. I think it's google.com/news alerts. But if you Google it, it'll come up too. Basically, what this is your concierge service where you put in a keyword and it's going to spider out and bring back everything on a weekly or a daily basis that you are looking for. I like weekly. For instance, if I set these up, I might set up 5 to 10 of them and set them up to come to me once a week. So every Wednesday, I get my Google News Alerts, and this way I can batch my activities. So Wednesdays are my day to do research and my job search. Maybe Tuesdays are LinkedIn stuff, and Thursdays are following up with recruiters or whatever. But I have one activity for, let's call it 30 minutes a day, and you would be amazed how much more you can get done in less time when you batch your activities. Anyhow, so the type of Google News Alerts that I'm going to want to set up are probably things like growth companies plus, at the actual plus sign, like a Boolean search, plus San Antonio, Texas. And then I'm going to play around with this. I'm going to set up another one. I'm going to call it Career Services, just to see what information's running around out there about Career Services. Career Services plus San Antonio, Texas. Maybe I want to look at things that are sort of on the periphery of my industry. Maybe I want to get back into recruiting again, which I don't, but let's say I did. I would put in executive recruiting plus San Antonio, Texas. So, again, this gives you the ability to monitor growth in San Antonio and specific keywords in San Antonio and specific industries in San Antonio. So you can play around with that and do, you know, some of my clients have 10 or 15, and then once they figure out what's coming back to them, they'll scale back. And this way, everything is coming to you. All the information is really condensed, and now, again, you feel empowered. You understand what's going on, what's moving, growing. Speaking of moving and growing, another thing that you can do to track growth if you're looking in a specific geographic area is you could put in mergers and acquisitions plus San Antonio, Texas, or IPOs plus San Antonio, Texas, or private equity firms plus San Antonio, Texas, or venture capital firms plus San Antonio, or corporate expansions plus San Antonio, or corporate moves plus San Antonio. So these are all excellent keywords that are going to bring you back everything that, and you can see how the imagination can really run with this in terms of what you can find out. I mean, it's amazing. And when you're in there, you might want to plug your own name in there too, in case you're ever mentioned on Google, just to sort of manage your what we call digital dirt, which is not a very nice way of saying that's our online identity. Basically, if you ever get mentioned for something or in something, of course you want to know. Anyhow, so you set this up to come to you once a week, and now all of a sudden you know the moves, the expansions, the industries that are growing, the burgeoning industries, the buoyant industries. You could even do declining industries, San Antonio, Texas, so you stay away. Or, you know, maybe you're trying to research industries that are on the periphery of the industry that you're in. So there's all kinds of cool things that you can get in one lump sum from this sweet little tool. Now, what do you do with this information? Should I come back to that, or should I tell you now? No, I'll come back to that. So this is a way that you can do due diligence. Let's talk about other ways that you can do your due diligence, because this is an important component to using setting yourself up for success with the hidden job market. You can look up information on LinkedIn. You can explore information through associations and trade journals. You can conduct informational interviews. You can explore and conduct and, you know, look into this, whether you are changing industries or staying in your same industry, simply by saying something like, if you're looking at a new industry, you might say something like, yeah, I wanted to reach out to you because, you know, because we have a mutual friend, or because I read about you, your company in the paper, or because we're in the same LinkedIn group together, whatever it is. And you can say, I'm looking at two industries right now for consideration. I'm doing some due diligence. I'm currently, you know, an XYZ in this industry. And I'm trying to get some expert guidance. So I can make my decision and take the next step. And yours is one of those industries that I'm researching. Would you mind terribly if I asked you a few questions and just garnered your expertise? If you would be willing to give me a little mentoring, answer a few of my questions. The reason that this works so well, even if you call a stranger, and I know this because I speak from experience, I used to do it all the time, is because it's flattering to have somebody call and say, I want to interview you. I want to interview you on the area that you're an expert at. There's very few industries that this is difficult. You know, if you were in the music industry or, you know, movie star or famous sports figure or something, then it gets a little tricky. But for most people, they're very flattered that you came to the table asking for their opinion and advice. So that's why these are very easy to get. If you are looking to stay in the same industry, you can say, hey, Jack, I just wanted to run something by you and get your mentoring, if you wouldn't mind terribly. I'm doing some research on the future of our industry, and I'd like to sit down and just confidentially ask you a few questions and maybe exchange some notes. Would you be open to that? So all of these are really gracious, really informal, me to you. And, you know, interestingly enough, the thing that I stay away from more than anything is the hard sell, painting someone into a corner, because those types of scenarios elicit usually a firm response, and there's only two ways they can go, yes or no. You know, it's like if you sit down with someone and you're networking with them and you say, Jack, you know me and you know my skills. I think it's time for me to move on. My company's reorganized. They're moving overseas. You know, is there anything at your company? Would you have a spot for me? Or do you know of any companies that, or can I give you my resume? And if you hear of anything, all of that is going to elicit a negative response unless you just happen by some, you know, luck of the draw to connect with him at the very right time. So isn't it better to have a more open ovation and say, Jack, here's what's happening, and then I'd love to use you as a reference. Would you be open to backing my expertise as a leader in global marketing for software sales or whatever it is, and or software, global marketing for software sales? But you see the difference. You've opened up the lines of communication to give that person more freedom to come up with a variety of responses, more that are going to be positive, and thus reinforce your confidence, create more of a collaborative exchange of information instead of pushing that your friend that you like and respect into a corner with something uncomfortable that you don't even want to do anyway. So there, really, that theme is one that I have had my clients use for years and years and years, and it's worked out really well. And it just so happens that works even better for executives, because executives find it very uncomfortable to be in a position where they have to have these types of conversations. So this is a very gracious way of eliciting, oh my goodness, it's the end of the day, of deriving a better response, a more positive response, and a response that allows for room for a lot of positive things to happen. When you present yourself and show up and you give someone the option of helping you, many times they'll try to come up with more than one idea if you just give them a chance to do so. So this is the kind of due diligence you want to look at: industries, that are moving, growing, expanding, buoyant, stable, have a good short and long-term economic outlook. Maybe they're right in your line of fire and in your industry. Maybe they're on the periphery. Maybe it's a whole other industry and you're going to transfer your skills into. Either way, we should, at the end of the day, fish where the fish are for the best compensation, for the most use of your skills, for the most long-term, short and long-term success. So having a focus of direction is really important. Understanding where you want to look, your driving motivators, the things that are most important to you, and exploring some industries, again, you know, setting up the Indeed alerts, the things that you can do to start amassing information and building your confidence with knowledge. So how else do we find the hidden job market and tap into it? Here's another free piece of technology that, you know, I'm going to back up because I didn't cover something with Google News Alerts that I wanted to cover. You can research a geographic area with Google News Alerts. You could also research a specialty area anywhere in the world. So let's say, for example, you are a medical device operations director, or let's say you're a COO for medical device companies, and you want to look up where those medical device companies are, let's say in the United States. If you go to Google Maps, you type USA into the cursor, or you could type in, let's say, the Southeast. You can really segment off any of the particular areas, or you can just look nationwide. And then you, right over where you put whatever location that you wanted to get more information in, then you would type right over that your keyword or your industry. So commercial real estate or medical device companies or whatever it is, and Google Maps is going to show you where they all are. Sometimes it's nice to pull back and research an industry nationwide so you can see where there is a concentration. Again, it's that knowledge, that industry knowledge that you are getting that's helping you feel more confident in this new type of job search. So this only takes a minute or two. So now you're getting the opportunity to look at where all these are. And, you know, I think I just was talking about Google Maps when I should have been talking about Google News Alerts, but that's okay. The theory is the same. So with Google News Alerts, you would do the same thing, but you would not put in, we were using the example, San Antonio, Texas. And so you would put in, let's say, medical device companies plus growth, or you could say, if you wanted to segment out a sub-industry of that, you could say medical device companies plus oncology, let's say, or medical device companies plus mergers and acquisitions. And then that Google News Alert is going to send back all of those results on a weekly basis. Okay, so I'll jump back over to Google Maps now. Google Maps is another layer that you can use to do research. Now, the reason that this is so meaningful is because prior to Google Maps, our only option was to use lists that we got from, you know, like financial lists from Yahoo, and oh, there's a couple others that are floating around out there. But to, let's say that you wanted all the names of, I don't know, the big banks in New York City or something, you're going to pay hundreds of dollars for that information, for the contact name, the address, company description, how big they are, how many employees they are. And it's just really painstakingly it's expensive more than anything else to get that information. But now all we have to do is hone in on a particular industry, and you can get it within seconds for free. Now, it still takes a little time versus paying somebody to generate a list with contact names for you, but really it's not that difficult. So let's use a couple examples. Let's go back to Texas and say I'm looking for software companies. So I would go to Google Maps. In the cursor where I can pop in a location, I'm going to put in Texas. when the map hones into Texas, because this is a beautiful visual too. So if you're doing a search in relation to your home, or you know, you want to sort of work in concentric circles out, so you're wanting to drive a certain mile radius from your home, let's say, this is also a perfect tool for this. So I hone into Texas, and then right over where I just wrote Texas, I'm going to type my industry of choice over the top of it. So I might say software companies. And that map is going to light up with all of the areas where the software companies are. And if I hover my cursor over it, it's going to give me information on address, website, phone number, location. Often they'll have a picture of the building. So you can derive a lot of information in a really quick snapshot. Now let's say that you found 50 that were on what I would call your A list of companies. Then all you have to do is pop in the name of the company, ABC Software Company, plus president or CEO, Google, to quickly find your key contact's name. So you can create a list. It'll still take a little work, but it's pretty easy compared to what we used to have to do or what we used to have to pay for. So let's talk about key contacts for a minute. I have always suggested that working top-down is the very best way to connect with companies. And the reason is because recruiters, mid-managers and recruiters are generally in the middle of the situations. And thus, they're the ones that are the most busy with task-driven work. When you get up to the executive level, this is where we require more of a visionary, results-driven, goal-focused oversight. And thus, they are, I don't want to say they're less busy, but they're using different skills to run the company. They don't get as many calls and knocks on their door as middle management does. And they understand and talk money really well. So if you can learn to communicate your skills and strengths in the terms of metrics, the value that you bring to the table, you have an ear with top executives. Human resources does not speak this language. They do not care that you drove revenue $1 million in under 6 months. I mean, they care, but they are tasked with different responsibilities. Somebody gives them a job order, and they have to match up those skills and strengths. And so, you know, there are some interviewing and different things that they do. But for the most part, if you want to get an executive's attention, you talk about how you can make or save them money. So when I do a resume for a client, my primary objective is to draw out the results and get my client, first of all, thinking in terms of, we need to lead with the results that you bring to the table. And almost everybody has quantifiable results. They usually just don't know it because most of us are not paid to think about the results that we bring in dollars and cents. We're paid to do a task. But regardless of what your station is, most people do have results that they can quantify. A while ago, a long time ago, I remember seeing a letter that was a value proposition letter that explained this person's value, and the value was written by a janitor. And he had help after going through one of my mentor's programs. Basically, the letter came out saying something like this. Do you need a dependable janitor? Well, last year for Widget Enterprises, I was there, you know, it was like, I think he said, I was the in their top 2% of employees, never missed a day of work. Here's a few other accomplishments. And he says, save $7,000 a year, changing out all the light bulbs to LEDs or something like that. Created a email work request form that saved 50% time in repairs and cleanups. And opened up the lobby on time every day for 4 years straight. That is quantifying the results that you bring to the table. It would be really easy, you know, before this man took my friend, my mentor's course, he was saying the same thing most of us do. Well, it's just what I do. I clean the floors, I wash the windows, I change out the light bulbs, I open up every day. So all he did was understand the value of shifting his thinking from what he did to what happened when he did it. And that shift got him a fantastic job. So these are the types of things that catch key decision makers' attention. So I have no problem sending letters to presidents, CEOs, no problem at all. And some people will say, well, what if it's a huge company like Johnson & Johnson? It's okay. I've seen that work too. You don't have to. You can go to the division president for the West Coast or for the, you know, whatever. But you can. I've never discouraged anybody from sending anything because I think most people find when it's done properly, it's much easier to connect with people than maybe they originally thought. You just have to know how and the mechanics of it. So the first thing is, of course, some type of reason to contact them. The second thing is a genuine compliment and understanding so they understand why you're contacting them. The third thing is speaking in terms of the value you bring to the table in dollars and cents. And you do that enough times and things fall into place rather quickly. So Google Maps is extremely valuable for creating what I'm going to call A-lists of companies that fit what you want to do. So you really have to close the door on thinking, well, I have to look for jobs and see what fits me, and then I have to figure out how to go after those jobs and think, here's what I want, here's why it's important to me, and now I'm going to go find those companies and I'm going to approach them. So Google Maps for identifying companies that align with your goals and driving motivators, and Google News Alerts to do your due diligence and also identify spot opportunities, to gain knowledge and identify spot opportunities. So I'm going to bounce back to that topic for a minute. What do you do when you find companies that are moving, growing, expanding, being acquired, or something's going on? Well, when we talk about approaching people graciously, here's how to do it. First of all, we make it about them, not about us. And we make it genuine. There's nothing salesy about it. So maybe, let's say, next week, you get an article in your email inbox, and it says ABC Software Company expands into San Antonio. And you say, wow, that sounds perfect. And the article, maybe it will be in the Business Journal. It will have quoted the president. Steve Schaub says, we're so excited to expand into San Antonio. It's the fastest growing city, and da-da-da-da-da, and we love it here, and we'll be breaking ground on our new campus in 2015, whatever it's going to give some information there. So all you have to do is print out that article, write a short value proposition letter to Steve, and you say, Dear Steve, congratulations on your recent expansion of your corporate offices into San Antonio. Are you looking for a good, you know, sales executive who has a verifiable string of success in software sales in Texas? And then you list a few accomplishments and you say, if this is interesting to you, may we chat if the timing is right. I'll follow up with a phone call next week to see if you're interested. So then you attach the article. Don't forget about that. Do you send a resume with this? Believe it or not, you don't have to. It is very important you attach the article, but you don't have to send the resume. In fact, I actually discourage sending the resume. Why not save it for the interview and really wow them? You've probably given him enough information to have at least a phone call with him And you haven't included your resume, so it won't get circumvented by his gatekeeper to HR. Which leads me to my next point. Oh, and somebody said to me very recently, does that really work? And I laughed because I said, well, think about it this way. This was the president of a company. If you got a letter like that from somebody, what would you think? And he paused for a minute and he said, you know, if the person had some good accomplishments, I'd probably call him or wait for him to call me because I think he's pretty smart. And I said, think about the universal problem. Companies are always looking for good people. I know that because I was a recruiter. People are always looking for good companies. So why not make it easy? Why not circumvent the middleman, the recruiter, the human resource person, and just go direct? Save him or her and yourself a whole lot of time and energy. And there's just no way to know whether there's somebody's going to be retiring out and needs a successor, or they're growing so fast, or they have a problem you can solve. So you can't guesstimate, well, do they need me, will they not need me? The only way to find out is to identify your market, reach out, and then see what happens. If he needs you, great. If he doesn't need you, fantastic. Doesn't matter. Because I know if you do this enough, good things will happen. So I remember it was last year. It just made quite an impression on me. This gal called me crying. She didn't have an executive position, but just to give you an example of how powerful this is, she graduated with a degree in radiology. She was working at Whole Foods or Home Depot or something like that in the interim, and she had been looking for 6 months and had not gotten one nibble with her brand-new degree. She spent all this money, and she called me and said, I'm afraid all my friends and I cannot find a job in radiology. They lie to us. There's no jobs here. We're all going to have to move out of the state of Texas to find a job with our new, certification or degree. And I said, well, wait a minute. Let's see if we can't fix this for you first. And I redid her resume and told her about the hidden job market. And I said, I want you to go to Google Maps. I want you to find, put in your zip code, and I want you to find all the companies that would employ a radiologist, outplacement centers, hospitals, doctor's offices, wherever, and that is within 25 or 50 miles of your zip code, something acceptable for you, and I want you to send them a value proposition letter. And she did send her resume. I mean, I never say, don't do this or never do this, because I prefer people play around with it and then find what works for them. But in her case, she sent a resume. She sent out 30 letters between Christmas and New Year's with her resume. She got 6 interviews, 2 of which were from companies that had previously sent her rejection letters when she submitted to the HR department. And then she got 2 job offers. She got a $40,000 raise. She's very, very happy now. And she gave me a really hard time, too. Every step of the way, she was saying, I don't know, is it going to work? I don't believe you. Is it working? So I think it's normal to have those feelings to a certain degree. But at some point, we have to turn the corner and say, okay, I'm going to make this happen. I'm going to figure out how to do this. Because it really means so much more leverage. And it's actually so much easier to call your own shots than it is to sit back and wait for the right thing to come along. So this was a gal that had been trying for 6 months, hadn't heard a peep out of anyone in her industry, changed her tactic just a bit, and we actually didn't even change her resume very much. And she got a rather dramatic result from that. So I love growth opportunities much more than any other type of direct mail. I think that they are the most gracious way to approach somebody, because you're introducing the opportunity for a conversation with a compliment about them. Congratulations on your recent award. Congratulations on your recent merger with whoever. Congratulations on your new appointment. Congratulations on your recent product launch or your recent success or your recent growth or whatever it is, and here's the article, and look, there's a picture of you. It's so flattering. And so it's just a very gracious way to make it about them and introduce the opportunity for a conversation to be the person that they need. So if you want to know a little bit more about value proposition letters, if some of you are a little bit in the dark about how to write these, I have another Career Power Strategy session call that I did on how to create your own value proposition letter. It comes with checklists and worksheets and templates. So if you need that, that's actually part of my online success story. You can grab that if you need that. Okay, so the next way that we would use a strategy to tap into the hidden job market would be direct mail. And I get a lot of pushback on this because people think mail is dead and, you know, it's so antiquated and seems like a lot of work and all of these things. But the truth of the matter is, you know, again, I'm sure Amy, who sent out those 30 letters, took a couple few hours to put that together. Sure that if you asked her, she would tell you that it was very, very much worth it. And she would have much rather done that than spent 6 months answering job ads where all she was hearing was, you know, the wind blow so, as a response. So it's definitely something worth doing. I learned this technique also from my mentor, who was an executive coach. He ran a direct mail program, and one of the things he did that I thought was so impressive is he always tested out his theories. And so he tested his direct mail on himself, and he said, well, I'm looking in a particular geographic area, so I'm going to do a hand-delivered direct mail distribution and just see what kind of results that I get. So his past background was oil and gas. He was an oil and gas executive, retired CEO from a oil and gas company. He found 50 companies that would might need his consulting services within a 30-mile radius of, you know, his area that he was living in Las Vegas. He printed out 50 letters and 50 maps, which took him a few hours. And the next day, he drove around and dropped them all off personally. And he walked into the lobby of each place and said, I have this letter for your president, and he gave his name. And he said that got a variety of responses. Some people said something short of get out of here, and other people said, well, he's right there. You might give it to him yourself, and everything in between. And at the end of the day, he secured a $10,000 a month consulting gig. Sorry, that's another phone. For a year. So, this can be interpreted one of two ways. He got 49 no's, or he made $120,000 for 3 hours of marketing work. I like this type of marketing because it's fast. It solves problems quickly, and that's what I enjoy about it. So, so I like direct mail. It's a low-tech method, but it's a high-touch method. And especially, remember, too, if you're reaching out for executives, they're over 40, generally speaking. They probably wear glasses. They like to feel things in their hands, you know, because it makes it more material, more of a connection between you and the reader. So if you do something on a really nice crayons paper and you put it in 12-point Times New Roman font, and you sign your name in blue ink because that's memorable, and put a P.S. because, again, that gets read all the time. P.S. I've excelled in every sales executive role I've ever held. I'll follow up with you next week to see if you have a minute to chat or something like that. Or I got my MBA from Wharton. Looking forward to talking with you. Or I'm available for relocation. Whatever it is, some point that's important, not, by the way, I'm a team player. But anyway, I digress. These really get results. And again, they allow you, it's good to go into the spirit of this thinking that you are cherry picking your opportunities. You're going to go after the low-hanging fruit, what represents the sweetest deals for you. And that's the spirit in which you need to proceed with this, that you're picking where you want to work. because the jobs are out there for people that can make or save the money. So we're just shifting our mindset a little bit and going direct. Now, recruiters, what about recruiters, all the jobs that they have? Interestingly enough, companies are very reticent to give recruiters these gigantic searches. I mean, it happens. But, you know, if you're placing a $200,000 a year executive or you're trying to find one and you're having trouble for some reason and a recruiter calls you, he's going to want 25% of that person's first year salary. So you're not going to get out of there, you know, for less than 50 grand. And that's a lot, considering maybe in the negotiations you end up paying a signing bonus. So all of a sudden there's all this money on the candidate's head, all this pressure before they've even set foot in the place. My theory has always been, why not just go direct, save the company $50,000, and negotiate that back into your salary package? People think they look better when they go through the doors of the recruiters, which, yeah, it looks good if you bring three qualified candidates. That's true, and you're one of those candidates. But remember, too, that the client, the recruiter's allegiance is to the client company, not to you. And he's going to be having a private conversation with the client that goes something like this. Well, I've got three candidates for you now. The first one's Rick. He makes $180,000. He works at Boeing. He's a this and a that. I really liked him on the phone. Second guy I got, or second gal I've got, is Sarah. She's a senior VP. Da-da. She makes $230,000. So they're going to be sharing all this stuff behind the scenes and then telling that person who they like the best and giving their opinion. So you have the fact that the recruiters are only going to get a certain number of those types of searches a year. You're at a severe disadvantage because they're comparing you behind the scenes and you have no idea how you stack up to the other candidates. You have no control over what they say. It's a lot of power to give up. So, yes, it's nice to have recruiters calling you, oh, you're perfect for this, yeah, this and that. But it's almost a false sense of security because the reality is the reality that I just shared with you. So I would much rather go direct to the company, because if I'm interviewing three candidates with a recruiter and my perfect person walks through the door and it's not going to cost me $50,000 to hire him, that person has a distinct advantage already. So... And in some cases with retained recruiters and stuff, there's some innuendos or some variables there that, you know, it might get a little sticky. But for most people, they don't ever have an issue with that. They don't engage in anything in that department, and it goes really well. And it works out to your favor. So we've talked about direct mail. We've talked about growth opportunities. And those are really great. Networking, I want to cover networking and LinkedIn and then touch on associations as well. So networking, when you network, my advice is never to ask someone if they know anyone who's hiring, give away your resume and your power with it and say, hey, if you hear of anything, feel free to pass it on. It's way too wide open. Sometimes it works. Yes, everything works some of the time. But I don't think it's an effective strategy for smart executives who are savvy. I really don't. I think the better approach is to sit down with them and ask for a reference and say, can you refer me, you know, because of our work in or because of our volunteer efforts with Habitat for Humanity, or can you speak to my ability as a project manager, as a turnaround expert, or whatever it is, and let them start thinking about how they can help you. And now they know you're available. So I promise if anything comes up, they will call you back right away. Your confidence is now through the roof, because you didn't automatically inspire a hard yes or a hard no. And if it is a yes, they're going to tell you anyway. You'll have to ask. So ask for a reference. The other thing you can ask for from networking contacts is information. You could say, hey, Sarah, I am exploring two industries, sub-industries in banking, this and this. Do you know anybody with companies that, such as Wealth Management Builders, ABC Capital Partners, or, Bank of America, that I might sit down and just garner their expertise, just get a little mentoring and gather information as I'm trying to make the best decision moving forward? Well, Sarah says, well, are you looking for a job? Are you trying to get... No, not there yet. I'm still in my due diligence phase, and I'm looking for a little mentoring. So you reassure them that you're not going to approach their networking contact for anything other than mentoring and information. And in this way, just by shifting the way you're thinking about employing some of these techniques, you become empowered with a lot more energy, because emotionally, you're not going out there and beating your head against a wall every day. You're in control. You're positive. You're getting the information and the feedback and the resources that you need, want, and desire, and things are happening because of that. I had a gal, I remember, I've had a lot of people that I've helped change industries using this technique, where they've said, do you know of anybody that works for a high visibility company like a Hilton or a Gold's Gym or a Whole Foods, something where when you say the name, everybody knows someone that works like that. Is there a way that you could hook me up with them just so I can ask them a few questions about their industry? I'm evaluating about 3 or 4 in that major category right now, and I'm just looking for a little mentoring, feedback, and guidance. And when they've been connected to the right people, those people then turn around and say, you know, we'd like to interview you. Now, the temptation would be, in that case, to always take your resume into those situations. But in actuality, that's the kiss of death, because it makes us look disingenuous. So we never take our resume. We always say, you know what? That sounds exciting. I'd love to talk to you more about that. What's our next step? And they say, well, do you have your resume? And you say, I don't have it with me, but I could certainly get you something. How should I deliver it? Hard mail, email? What would you like? And you let that situation flower that way. So that's just a nice way to network, to get expertise. You know, when I was exploring the career services industry after being a recruiter and deciding that I wanted to get on the coaching side, all I did was look up everybody that was on the periphery of my immediate industry, called them up, said, I mean, I really didn't care about what kind of connection we had. I think I said things like, we both live in Nashville. we're both in the career services industry. I'm an executive recruiter. I have my own firm. I'm trying to evaluate shifting into a slightly different role, but I just don't have enough information yet. Would you be willing to help me and maybe mentor me a little bit, allow me to interview you or ask you some questions? And when people are approached this way, they always say yes. Well, sure, come on down, you know, most always. So that's what happened, and that led me to executive coaching, which I was actually a really good fit for, and doing it for free for many years, and I just wasn't professionally trained at it at that point. And so the company that hired me was a big outplacement firm out of Boston. They ended up creating a position for me. And so then they were, you know, giving me some components of tapping into the hidden job market, and I was laughing, saying, oh, yeah, I know that works because that's what I did with you. After, I think, doing some things on job boards and feeling really discouraged and bad about myself, I decided to just take matters into my own hands. So if you're changing industries, the hidden job market works really well. If you have liabilities, the hidden job market works brilliantly. And you just have to be open, be positive, be smart, have a little bit of a plan. I remember one gal I worked with a while back. She was a news station manager in Florida. She got fired. It was really bad, kind of ugly situation. And she was afraid that her reputation, because she was in such a high visibility role, would be tarnished. she had an opportunity through someone she met at a dinner to interview for a station manager position in it, somewhere. It was like Louisiana or Arkansas. And I remember we talked about it, and she said, you know, it's such a small station, Mary Elizabeth, and I don't want to just fly up there and waste this guy's time. I'm just going to tell him, look, if you can't pay me $300,000, it's not really worth us to keep talking anymore. And that sounds logical, right? But I told her, please don't do that. Please just play it out for lots and lots of reasons. But what I would suggest you do is go up there, take note of what's going on, ask him what it is he's struggling with, what the problems are, and then pitch him some solutions. Give him a 5-point plan, just a simple plan. Nothing he can take and hire someone else and run with, but something enough to whet his appetite to say, yeah, this is the gal we need. So she went and did just that. He just loved her. Everybody loved her. And he made her an offer a little while later, and he says, oh, by the way, I couldn't tell you at the time, but we've been in negotiations with Clear Channel, and we now work for Clear Channel. And they offered her $60,000 more than she was wanting, thinking that was her top figure. And the fact that she had been fired never came up. So we don't want to play the end result, as my old musician friend used to say. We just want to keep open and keep things positive and concentrate on building the value of who we can be to people. So the two other things that I want to bring up is employing some of these techniques through associations. Associations are like these potent little portals that are entryways to the people, resources, and information you need to get either to take the next step in your industry or to sidestep into a new industry. They are great places to find informational interviews, to connect with the directors, who always want to talk to you, by the way, because their main thing is what? Increasing membership. So they're always happy to talk to you. And if you will just shake that tree a little bit, I think that you'll find some pretty nice fruit falls out of it. When I was first starting, with my last company, I was really trying to get them to pay for an association, a membership to Career Directors International, because that's our top association, gold standard. If you have a certification from them, you are a good resume writer. They're expensive. The tests are tough. I mean, that's why everybody really respects CDI. So they wouldn't approve it. And so I called the director, Laura DiCarlo. I said, here's my situation, and I'm trying to get them to pay. They won't yet. Is there anything I can do in the interim while we're waiting? You know, do you need any articles for your newsletter? How can I help you? Well, she just led that ovation. She said, you know, what do you write about? And I said, oh, you know, thorny topics, because I used to be a recruiter. I can write about cold calling, follow-up, and how to get past the gatekeeper and all these, you know. She's like, oh my God, yes, please send the articles right away. So I sent her two or three articles, immediately got published in their newsletter. I took that to my company, showed them. They gave me a big attaboy, look what Mary Elizabeth did. And I said, oh, I'm so glad you're happy. Well, now, do you think maybe you could pay for my membership? And they said, oh, absolutely, right? You know, of course. So that's how that all started. And then from that, I got to know everybody and got some more mentoring through CDI, continued to write articles. One day, Laura called me and said, someone called from the Business Journal. They needed two people to talk about this particular topic. I threw your name in the hat. You might be getting a call. So then I get published in the Business Journal. A little while later, MSN calls me, Forbes calls me, then Wall Street Journal calls me. We'd like to get a quote for this and that. Would you like to be in our article? That's how all that stuff started. It was from one effort through associations. So you can find jobs in there. You can find contacts in there. You can call and get informational interviews. And these layers that you were talking about, that you layer into your job search through the hidden job market, are all the blue ribbon strategies that make it easiest to get from point A to point B. That's really all this is. So you're just trying to, there's a million ways to do this. You only really care about the top three for you or the top five for you. And since we were talking about recruiters before, I don't consider recruiter jobs to really be in the hidden job market. I'm really talking about things that have not been given to a recruiter, have not been given to HR, that are just still a problem, or an attrition may be happening later on, or somebody is thinking of retiring, or there's an issue that needs to be solved, or there's fast growth and there's issues there. There's something there that it's a timing thing, and there's plenty of those for people of value. So that's what I'm defining as the hidden job market. The last thing I want to talk about is LinkedIn, because you can find opportunities, or I should say rather, it's sort of a soft way of the opportunities finding you through LinkedIn. And now I have a whole call on this, and it's very, very good. In fact, I just had the opportunity to go through a course where I learned how to optimize my clients' profiles for recruiters that use the corporate recruiter app. So very, very powerful stuff. Stuff that isn't even on the market yet to know that I also just learned. So very excited about that. But how do we use LinkedIn to find hidden jobs? There are two ways to get, you know, juice out of LinkedIn. The first way is making sure that your profile is keyword optimized. You've got to have the right keywords so that you get approached for the right jobs that fit you and so you are found. If you're not found, then they don't know you're just dead, no matter how good your profile is. The second thing that works for increasing your exposure and opportunities on LinkedIn is being connected to the right people. And you can do that through finding the right people through Google or through LinkedIn searches and through groups. So you can join up to 50 groups. And then you look through the group members, and you can invite them for free, and you can say, hey, we're both a member of the same group. Would you like to join my network on LinkedIn? Recruiters have to be in the recruiters, and I'm talking about internal and external recruiters. So when I say hidden jobs, I'm kind of flubbing here. But just to give you this information, recruiters need to be in their network in order for them to find you and see your profile if they're using the corporate recruiter app. So you've got to find them and just type in their industry plus recruiter and they'll all come up and just systematically send as many as you can invitations. So you grow your network. Most of them want to see a network over 501 connections. And you grow your network with the right key decision makers and internal and external recruiters and whoever else you're interested in, a nice cross-section of people. And again, you can do that through searching and groups. And when you do that, then all of a sudden you can be top of mind. You can be found. So let's say you want to move into a particular industry. The first thing you do is start to conduct searches in that industry for those key decision makers and connect with them. The second thing you do is you learn more about how to be a thought leader on LinkedIn, which is actually really easy. Does not involve as much work as you may think. In fact, hardly any at all. It's just really understanding what they're looking for and how they see you, and amazing things can happen. So these are the layers that you can layer into your job search fairly easily. And of course, I'm assuming anybody that's using these methods is going to have a really nice resume and a really well-done value proposition letter and know how to interview and things like this. But you can use the strategies for the hidden job market over and over and over again. And you know what else happens that's so great with the hidden job market is huge surges in salaries. It is probably average for my clients to email me and say they get about a $25,000 increase when they use my methods and step out, and then $50,000, $75,000, sometimes more, not uncommon, because It ends where it begins in terms of when you set the peg for those initial conversations at a place that's the job order isn't opened and you don't have a recruiter and there's so much hanging in the balance. It's much more flexible, malleable at that point. Sometimes they create positions for you, and I've gotten email after email after email about opportunities that and much, much greater salary and compensation packages, areas where my clients wanted to live, industries that they wanted to move into, liabilities like firing and long job searches and what they thought maybe was age discrimination or lack of college degree, that all these problems got solved because they took matters into their own hands. They had a really nice resume. They understood now how to sell their value, and they went direct. So there's a lot at stake for you in terms of your return to practice these methods and pick one or two that out of the ones that we've talked about today that you think you can do and try it out for yourself. So I had a few questions that came in before today's call, and let me just go through them and make sure I answered all of them. The first question is about my advice on sending a value proposition letter and resume, email, or postal service. Oh, I'm so glad that you asked this. No email. There's been many split tests done on this. For some reason, email is just too easy to delete, too easy to ignore. So I know it seems counterintuitive, but it's the hard mail that works best. It's the high touch and the low tech. It's what sets you apart from your competition. The fact that you're sending it to a president and it's a letter and you're not attaching the resume. It's subtle, but it's powerful. It's these little tweaks in your delivery that are getting you the kind of results that I've been talking about. So please don't use email. All right, let's see. I take it after finding a lead, we cold contact and email a prospective employer. What resume or letter do you recommend be sent with the email? And what do you suggest for email subject line to get the prospective employer to read the email? Well, obviously, I just answered that. We want to do hard mail. And it's good to think about this as really not a cold contact, but actually a warm contact, because of the way that you're setting up. You're using you twice as much as you're saying I in your letter. You are putting the emphasis on what they're doing, and you're putting the emphasis on your results. Not that you're a team player or super guy or gal, but that you drive, you know, revenues, $10.2 million in under 24 months in your last position, and they're going to say, whoa, who is this person? It's that type of speak that gets these leaders' attention. And the third question is, okay, I'm just reading. This is a long, this is a long email. This individual is asking if there is a bias in the job market and the level of position and compensation I am seeking is greater than those normally found on job boards. Yeah, this is perfect for you. Anything that seems like it might be hard or difficult to find, if what you're doing is you're paving your own way, essentially, and you're calling the shots, which puts you in a lot more control. So one of the things that you might want to do in your industry and position is just jump on salary.com and look at the area in California. This person mentions California. So look at the area in California that you're interested in and pop in your title or your industry and see what comes up to see what kind of range is the general compensation. And then the next thing you want to do in terms of interview strategies is when money comes up, focus on the value. Always take them back to the value that you bring by asking them questions about what they need, what they're challenged by, and speaking in terms of stories. But when money comes up, give a wide, wide range. So we never say, well, I make $97,000 currently, because now you've got a price tag on your head that is indelible, and can't be mentally washed away. And so now, instead of looking at your value and how much value you bring to them, they're thinking about, can we afford this person? This is the price tag. This is the, you know, number we have to beat. Or they're thinking, wow, we were prepared to pay $150. We can offer him $105. He's going to be really happy. So it's really like, you know, you're just sort of gambling when you throw out numbers. So the best thing to do is to give a wide range and say, well, I've been in the six figures. I've been north of 100. For the last several years, my total compensation has been between, you know, 100 and 300, give or take, a year. Or I've been in the, you know, low six figures or north of 200. So you're giving a very wide range, and then you're following up by saying, since we're discussing, I hope you don't mind me asking, did you have a range in mind budgeted for this position? So I've used that delivery for a long time because it works so, so well, and it's very gracious, and you're giving them something, but you're not giving it to them in a way that's going to negatively impact you in a way that you may know or may never know. Okay, so let me just open it up. I've gone a little bit over time, and I'm sorry for that. I'm just going to open everything up and unmute everybody and find, just ask if anybody has any questions. Okay, everybody is unmuted now. Does anybody have any questions that is on the call live that they want to ask before we wrap it up today? No questions? Going once?
I got a comment for you.
Okay. Who am I speaking to? First name only, please.
Kim.
Oh, hey, Kim. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. I appreciate you answering my question earlier. I wanted to simply just say, this has been extremely valuable to me. I have appreciated it immensely. I thought what you described and how you took us through that sequence is really something I'm going to spend some time thinking about, and I want you to know how much I appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Kim. I appreciate it. I get excited about it because I have seen people call me with the biggest problems only to have these huge wins on the other side, and it's a really big blessing to be able to help people. A lot of times it's people and their families. They're just trying to make the best decision they can, and the decision is going to impact their children's schooling and their wife. And so any time that I can help people get what they want, it's very exciting and very gratifying to me. So I get very excited about this information because oftentimes, too, it's the edge that that people need along with a good resume to turn everything around for them.
Absolutely. Well, you have my highest compliments, and I appreciate it.
Well, coming from you, Kim, that is a big compliment. Thank you very much. And Kim is a client of mine. We created his resume and very, very talented executive, so I appreciate that very much coming from you. I hope you don't mind me sharing that.
Well, no, thank you.
So I'll just close with the story. I had an executive construction executive call me, and he was looking for a position in Florida when there was a mass exodus of construction executives and no one could find a job. And he says, I know it's impossible, but my family really wants to stay here in Florida. And so, again, we did do his resume, but we sent him out and I gave him some ideas for the hidden job market. And a few weeks later, he called me back and he says, well, you'll be happy to know I never answered one job on one job board. And I received a 10% raise and a $23,000 signing bonus, and I got a vice president's role with a great company 15 miles from my house, and I just can't believe it. And, you know, this was, you know, again, a family situation, a situation where his industry was actually in very steep market decline, and he was able to have a huge win. And that's the difference with the hidden job market is firings and market declines and things that are really extreme, where people really think there is just no way I can, you know, come out of this on top. That's where this really, these methods that we've been discussing really come in handy. And so if anybody has any questions afterwards, please feel free to email me. And I just really appreciate everybody joining me for this call. I hope this information has helped you. And have a great week and go out and try something new. And, you know, God willing, watch good things happen with these strategies. So thank you very much, everybody. Have a great night. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.